And now Philip is going to come and join me, Philip Siddell. And Philip married to Joe. He met Philip last night. And we heard a bit about the Navy again at breakfast this morning. And tell me what you do when you're not doing your day job. What do you keep in your garage?
There's a whole range of things in our garage. We've got half the stuff for church in our garage because we're in a church plant, so we cart stuff in boxes to church in the morning. But I think what you're driving at is down the left-hand wall of the garage. You'll probably find about 7 bikes of various shapes and sizes, including a tandem, I think, hanging on the wall.
A tandem?
Indeed, a tandem.
Do you see your wife ever seen on a tandem with you?
My wife thinks a tandem's a great idea.
Is she at the front or the back?
She's at the back.
She's at the back.
Reading a book.
Not pedalling.
Oh, pedalling, of course.
Pedalling, of course. And why 7? I don't understand why you need... You can ride one bike at once.
I'm sort of guessing at 7. They're not all my bikes, Johnny.
Right.
So the family do have their own bikes there, and we have lodgers as well, so they're all sort of stacked up, ready to use. We used to have them in a big pile in the garage, but we then discovered these wonderful things called bike hooks, which mean you can hang them on their side and just take them out at ease.
And you repair them or something? You make them? You build them? What do you do with them?
Yes. Now, generally, that doesn't take place in the garage, which Joe probably...
Not so
would like me to say publicly here, that tends to take place in the hall.
In the hall?
Yeah.
In the dining room?
I will occasionally build bicycle wheels in the sitting room, yes.
Okay. In the kitchen?
Oh, kitchen's fine, yes. I'm in the kitchen.
Bathroom?
No, I don't think I've ever built a bicycle in the bathroom.
Bedroom? Yes.
There are bicycles on the top landing.
Yeah.
They are banned from the bedroom, and I don't think they've ever crept. Or there was an occasion once, wasn't there, when a bicycle had to be stored in the bedroom? Yes.
For a little while. You're getting signals from the back of the room.
I am getting signals from the back of the room.
Okay, this is what you do on your day off, is it? You go and build bike wheels or something.
I like fixing things.
Yes.
And making things.
Yes.
So, building bicycle wheels is something that I've recently sort of taken up and enjoyed. And, I love doing that.
The nerd is alive and well, is that
the
right?
The nerd is completely alive and well. Yes, there's a well-known formula. As a mathematician, I know this one well, for the number of bikes you ought to own. And the formula is simply N plus 1.
Tell me about N then. What's N?
N is simply the number you have already.
I see it. You've lived by that formula for some years, haven't you?
Oh, it's a wonderful formula.
All right. You're going to speak to us tonight. You're going to talk to us about a question, I think. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. All right. Would you like to do that? That'd be right, kind.
Yeah, I will, Johnny. There should be a sheet, I think, coming round. Yes, they're just moving very quickly to come round. In fact, we're going to look at a passage that Henry mentioned as he sang that song at the beginning of the second slot he gave for us tonight, a passage from Mark chapter 8. Where Jesus invites Peter and the other disciples to make a critical choice. We've been hearing tonight, haven't we, about some of the choices that Henry made over the course of his cricketing career. That critical choice to wear a black armband in that game against Namibia. A choice that we heard he weighed up over the course of that month after Andy Plower had invited him to think about making that stand. And it was a choice that he weighed with close friends and with people who he thought could give him good advice. Because it was an important choice, and a choice that would change the course of his life, bring him here tonight to speak to us in a way that I've found profoundly helpful and inspiring. I'm sure you have too. But what I want us to recognise is that we heard from Henry what that choice involved. It involved a costly sacrifice, an international career, a relationship. It brought with it the possibility of exile, of jail, even death, certainly the threat of death. And we've heard a little bit about what motivated it. He couldn't stay silent when he had an opportunity to speak up for those who had no voice at all. It was, as that friend described to him, it would have been almost immoral not to take the opportunity he had to speak up on their behalf. So we heard what the choice involved, and we heard why it was a good choice to make. And we're going to go tonight ourselves, not to that choice, that was a choice only Henry could make, but to the choice that Jesus invites everybody to make. Once they've worked out who he is and what he came to earth to do. And if you look at that passage that's in front of you there, just before that in Mark chapter 8, Peter, the apostle Peter, has worked out and acknowledged that Jesus is, in his opinion, the king that God had sent to save his people. That's what he says. Jesus says, "Who do you think I am?" And Peter says, "I think you are that Messiah king." He's worked out who Jesus was. And then Jesus confronts him in the few verses just before this passage, not with a triumphal entry plan at the head of a conquering army to Jerusalem, but instead with the prospect of a king who was going to suffer and die at the hands of the religious leaders in Jerusalem. It wasn't quite what Peter was expecting. He knew who Jesus was. He knew now that Jesus came to die and indeed was beginning to see that he came to die for him. But he was left facing a very critical choice too. Here is this king I want to follow, but will the cost be too great? Choice that Henry faced, wasn't it? Here was a choice I want to make, I want to speak out, but will the cost be too great? It's the choice Peter faced. And Jesus lays out the choice for Peter and then gives him three persuasive reasons as to why it is the best choice that Peter could possibly make in the world. Here's the choice. It's there on your sheet if you want to look at it. Just highlighted for you there. Jesus says, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me." It's open to all, isn't it? Not just a choice for Henry, this choice, but it's whoever. We spoke about that last night. Christian faith is for everybody, whether we're significant, known, or whether we're insignificant and unknown. No matter who we are, no matter what age we are, Jesus says this to us tonight, "Whoever wants to be my disciple." But look what's involved. It was a tough choice, like it was a tough choice for Henry. It involved self-sacrifice rather than self-service. This wasn't just a choice for personal gain. This was a choice that involved putting self to one side. Jesus said, "No, the focus of your life is to be me, not you. The agenda is no longer to be set by you and the choices you want to make, but by me and what I would like you to do as my follower, my servant." And it was costly. And there's a need, isn't there, whenever you face a costly choice, in a way to do a simple cost-benefit analysis. Is the cost worth the result? We do it with everything, don't we? With exams, are we prepared to do the work in order to gain the results and all that they bring and all the opportunities and doors that they open? Am I prepared to undergo training in a workplace in order to get a qualification that will open doors for the future? Am I prepared to do the hard yards, as the rugby player would say, in order to get the glory, the win at the end of the game? And Jesus knows that. He is not unaware of what he calls people to do once we work out who he is and that he came to die for us. He's not unaware that he's making a big ask when he asks people to follow him and to trust him to make the big calls about the priorities and choices that are to be yours from now on. And so Jesus lays down three, I think, very persuasive and helpful reasons to help us see why the choice he's asking us to make is the right choice and the wise choice. And look at what he says. Here's the first reason. He really says, think of the alternatives. And it's there in that verse, verse 35. "Whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and the gospel will save it." If you live in our house at Christmas time, one of the routines now is that you put the Mamma Mia film on from ABBA. Cue amused laughter at dreadfully poor singing from otherwise well-known and respected actors, but also mass family singing as well. And you'll know the ABBA song, Winner Takes It All. Do you see what Jesus is saying though? He's saying the loser takes it all. See, the world thinks that actually it's the winner who takes it all. But Jesus says it's the one who loses their life who will actually gain it. If I try and keep it, if I keep myself at the center, keep myself in the driving seat, save my own life, try and win God's favor in my own way, by my own efforts, using my own words, well, Jesus says you'll lose your life, not save it. But if I deny self, if I give up my life, if I lose it for him and the gospel, notice it's a positive choice. It's not an empty choice I'm making. It's not evacuating meaning out of life. It's putting meaning into life. It's putting Jesus and the gospel at the heart of what drives me and makes me tick. Then Jesus says, I'll gain it. Loser takes it all. You'll know I was in the Navy, if you've been here over the last couple of days. And there's always a choice to be made when you want to go into a boat that's moored alongside. There is a point at which you have to transfer your weight from the shore to the boat. You have to decide whether you're going to rely on the shore to keep your weight or whether you're going to rely on the boat to take your weight. And there's a moment where the transfer has to take place. And I, and like most people who've ever lived or worked on the water, have always been in a situation where you make the choice at the wrong moment or too late. And I can vividly remember the day when I put one foot on the gunwale of a boat that someone had inconveniently forgotten to hold tight to the side. Now, I have long legs, and my legs stretch a long way. But there is a moment of no return when your legs are both on the shore and on the gunwale of the boat, but they are so far stretched apart that there is no way back. And you know the only way is now very wet. And I have been there and I have done it far too many times for my own sanity and embarrassment. But Jesus is saying we can't live life like that. We can't try and back two horses at once because we'll end up losing everything. If I want to follow him, I have to deny self, take my foot off the quayside and put it firmly in the boat that is following him. And if I try and do both, I'll end up embarrassed in the water, losing everything. Jesus says, think of the alternatives. There are no other good alternatives to putting your trust in me. You'll lose everything if you try and keep everything. Here's the second alternative he suggests. He says, think of your soul. Have a look at verse 36. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? What Jesus is saying is we are not what we own. We are much more than that. But so much of the world and the culture around us tells us that we are exactly that, aren't we? That actually the good life is to be found in what we have, in what we own, in the pension fund we've accumulated, in the house that we're going to retire to, in the things and the gadgets that we have to make life enjoyable or pleasurable. But Jesus says, we're not what we own. I can gain, he says, the whole world and forfeit my soul. Lose what it means to be me in God's eyes. Miss out on the value that he gives to me as a human being, not the value he gives because of the possessions I own or the things that I've done or things that I've achieved. Henry, I don't think, knew that I was going to speak off this passage tonight. But he sang that song tonight, didn't he? And that repeated line was this: you can have all this world, but give me Jesus. Jesus says you can gain the whole world, but you will forfeit your soul. If you don't follow me, if you don't make me the choice, then you will ultimately lose everything, and it's much more than just the material things you have. You are valuable, you matter, and your life is worth so much more than just the things that you have around you. Don't lose it. But here's the third reason that Jesus says it's a good choice to make to follow him, and it's this. It's think about the future. We are so often short-sighted, aren't we, about the choices that we make. Politicians, inevitably, are short-sighted, aren't they? They would love to be long-sighted in some ways. Those who have any understanding of how financial systems work know that they have to be long-sighted, but they can't be. Because elections don't work in such a way as to allow them to be long-sighted. We don't help them in that way. But you and I make short-sighted decisions too, don't we? Henry could have made a short-sighted decision as well. Do I just act in a way that keeps me safe in the short term? Or do I act in a way that may not keep me safe in the short term, but may involve in the life and the saving of lives of others who are currently being oppressed? Do I do things for the short term or for the long term? And Jesus says he wants us to make the decision on the basis of the future. Henry sang about it in that last song. The Jesus who came to earth as a baby says he'll return as a king. That's what he says here. Verse 38, if anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man, that's Jesus, will be ashamed of them when he comes with all his Father's glory with the holy angels. When he comes and we have to give an account to him for the lives we've led, it would be a shame if we'd made a decision for the short term, not forgetting that day when he will return, which seems so far in the distance we think we can ignore it. He says that would be a foolish choice. But we are so often short-term, aren't we? Jesus says we're often short-term, actually, because of the opinion of others mattering more to us than the opinion of God. If you make a choice for Jesus, it's more than likely that many people in the culture around you will not think that's a wise choice. Will think that you're crackers to base your life and your future on a book that's irrelevant, outdated, and can't simply be used to guide you in a modern world. But Jesus says it is the wise choice that guides and directs your life in line with the one who will return to judge the world. Short term or long term, Jesus says think of the future. Don't just think of today. Don't just think of the opinion of others, but think about what the verdict of God's Son, who came to die for you, will be when he returns in glory. Three persuasive reasons Jesus gives for why we ought to make the choice to follow him. A Christian put it this way. He said, he is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. In other words, Jesus is saying this is the wise choice to make. Now, if you're a Christian here tonight, I hope that this has been a reminder and an encouragement that it was a wise choice. Johnny asked Henry, was it worth it? Well, Jesus says it was worth it. Even if actually things hadn't worked out well for Henry, it would have still been worth it, because he would not have had to be ashamed of Jesus at the last day. It may be that you know that Jesus is the king that God sent. You know that he died for you in order that your sin might be forgiven. And you know that he is calling you to make that choice for him. I hope you've heard tonight that it is a wise choice to make, and it's a choice worth making, and I'd encourage you to make that choice. Henry said he made it in a quiet prayer. Maybe that's something you need to go away and do. Maybe you need to come and hear more about Jesus tomorrow morning. We're speaking about Jesus before Pontius Pilate. Come and speak to Johnny. He'd love to talk to you about it. It may be that you're still not convinced that it's a wise choice to follow Jesus. Now, you may not want to talk to me about that, but I would love to talk to you about that if you wanted to, because I think Jesus' reasons are very persuasive. And I think they show that he knows that we think in the short term it's going to be hard and people won't think it's wise. But I think he's persuasive that it really is. And I'd love to talk further if you don't think it is. But thank you for listening tonight. Thank you for being so attentive. I've appreciated that enormously. And I hope you'll come and listen some more tomorrow.